don't know about you, ladies. This wasn't how I intended to start this either, but I'm going to. I don't know what your courtship was like, and meeting your husband, and if you're married, and so forth. I chose between a few different young men. And honestly, this sounds so dumb or unspiritual or something, but I really think that I married my husband because he could talk books with me. Because the other young men who asked me were fine people. You know, they've grown up, they've married fine women, and then raised beautiful, faithful families. But James was the only one I met who could talk books with me. We're still talking books. So, if books happen to be your love language, come talk to me. Anyway, it was fun looking through these things. Not very many of you finished the poem for me. A few did. It was Robert Louis Stevenson. Some of you came up with creative lines of your own. So, according to the jellyfish theory, that was good. In summer,
quite the other way. I have to go to bed by day.
Right.
I have to go to bed.
See the birds still hopping on the trees. And hear the grown-ups' people's feet still going past me in the street. A Child's Garden of Verses was part of my childhood, but then I think even more than that, I read it to my younger siblings so much before I finally left home that I just assumed everybody knows these things. Anyway, let's get to talking about art. We're going to move on from literature and talk about art. Whatsoever things are lovely. Now, I am not going to give an art history course, even though that would also be fun. I guess I'll just say what I have on my paper, and if we have time, we'll talk more art history. But first point. Children naturally respond to beauty and harmony. It's part of God's natural world. How many of you are familiar with this in a mathematical sense? Anybody? Can you tell me what this slide represents? Now, I am not a mathematician by any means. You have to talk to my husband more about that. I find this fascinating. We have a series of Fibonacci numbers represented in nature here. God is a God of harmony and beauty. And you see it all over creation. Anybody could say that, whether you know the name Fibonacci numbers or not. Plato, so many centuries back, said God ever geometricizes. And we all think, oh, you know, that old guy in a bathrobe, he was so hung up on geometry. He had the idea, because the ancients of the time believed in the four elements, fire, water, bile, blood. And he had the idea that each of these four basic elements had a different geometric shape that it was composed of. And scientists through the years have laughed at that idea. But modern research is coming back, not necessarily to that exact idea, but finding that in the midst of seeming chaos, there is harmony and structure. And there's an entire study called the study of chaos theory, and it talks about fractals, which, looking at what looks like chaos, when you study it over a period of time, or zoom in close, it is made of repeating harmonious patterns. It's proved all over the world. And symmetry is at the heart of God's creation. And Fibonacci numbers are fascinating. The ancients referred to it as the golden ratio. And so much of creation follows this rule. Petals of flowers, plants, the spiral of shell. This is called the golden spiral. And these numbers repeat themselves. The digits of your fingers. The distance from your belly button to the bottom of your feet. These things follow this golden ratio. And it is a harmonious pattern that repeats itself over and over and over. And human beings naturally respond to it. When you break it up and intentionally make it chaotic, human beings respond to that with unease. So symmetry is an underlying fact of the universe. And it's something that God placed there, and I believe children immediately respond to it. So my point here is children naturally respond to beauty and harmony, and the flip of that is that intentional ugliness offends a child's intelligence. Okay? Children are not stupid. And maybe it was because I was more of this kind of nature, I don't know, but I remember, and one of the reasons I asked that question this morning, do you remember a particular illustration that had a very deep effect on you? It could be one way or the other, something very beautiful that you loved, or something that disturbed you. And I'm going to tell you about something that disturbed me. I went to public school in first grade. And I had the misfortune to go to public school in the late 70s. So they are throwing out the traditional stuff and replacing it with something more progressive. My first grade readers, I have no idea what the words were. I did learn to read. They had illustrations that I hated. With a visceral hatred. As a first grade child, everything in me revolted against these illustrations. The people, they weren't stick figures, but they had these arms that came out, and on the ends, it would be like this. I don't know, maybe that's not big enough to see. Let's try this again. I'm just going to illustrate the hands, because that was what really got me. The hands came out on the ends of these arms that were chopped off, okay, arms coming out from a body. Here is a hand. They were circles, and then they had these triangular digits that were not connected to the hand. This was what my first grade reader had for human hands. I hated it. Like, hated it. And I still remember the feeling I got about those illustrations. They were horribly disturbing to me. And when I illustrate for children, I am not a great artist, but I think about this very thing. Children can enjoy playfulness. They can enjoy works of imagination. But they cannot enjoy that which is ugly and intentionally unharmonious. And I'm saying Little Google Goes to School is a perfect example of that very thing. It's ugly. It is intentionally unharmonious. The colors are intentionally clashing. They are hideous. And nobody should have to look at it. Let's go back to Little Google. I showed Little Google this morning, if you weren't in here, but that is so ugly. Isn't that so ugly? I mean, children look at that and they say, that's ugly. It's just yuck. And I think it that's offensive. It's offensive to a child. Children respond to beauty. God made us that way. And they instantly recognize when something is just intentionally ugly. And it's not just offensive to your sense of beauty. It offends your intelligence. Come on. I'm smarter than that. So I'm saying prioritize beautiful illustrations in the books on your children's shelves. Now, my children's library, I don't have any idea how many volumes we have anymore. I got started collecting them 9 years before my first son was born. I had it some time. And we have a lot of children's books. By no means does every single one have great works of art in it. I was giving you what you say here this morning. This is not some kind of beautiful, great work of art. It is incredibly good illustration. I cannot do what Marie Sendler can do. I'm not saying everything has to be gorgeous, but take the time to put enough books on your shelves that are beautiful, like truly beautiful. They're out there, and your children need to recognize and respond to beauty. In your books, in your home. If you walk into my home, you won't see a lot of cutesy things hanging on the wall. We don't have a lot of farmhouse decor. I'm not trying to knock that. But if you walk into my home, you will see works of art. We are not rich. I do not have originals. I have prints. But we have some large prints, and I have them nicely framed. If you walk into my dining room, you will see the gleaners. You will see a very large 17th century floral. My living room has art hanging in it. The stairwell has Monet hanging in the stairwell. If you go into my bathroom, you will find John Singer Sargent. His Oyster Gatherers of Conkell are hanging in my bathroom. I love the painting. It's just small. But the truth is, we can get these things for very inexpensively. Actually, the huge one hanging in my living room, I got it at a Dallas thrift store way back when I was first married, and it still says in red crayon on the back, $191. That's what I paid for it. Keep your eyes open and surround your children with real beauty. Teach them floral design. Teach them beautiful crafts. Surround children with beauty. That is, I think, what God intended for the human race. He placed man in a beautiful setting, and I do believe that is his intention. Surround your children with beauty. So what constitutes great art? Great art glorifies a great God. This is Esalen again. People do not paint in rapture the rise of the dollar on the world money market. There is no Bach to compose a fugue like a waterfall joyfully heralding the arrival of some political hack, the joy in man's desiring. No one will travel over half the world to look at a mural dedicated to collaborative learning or development of social skills. That's not what people make art about. No. Great art glorifies a great God. So man, the worshiper, creates art in praise of something that is greater than himself. And this has always been true. Beautiful illustration, whether it's in books, on walls, nurtures the child's God-given longing for the sublime. And children recognize these themes. Ellen was telling me about a copy of a child's Garden of Verses that she had as a child. And I can think of beautiful books from my childhood and also beautiful books that are on my shelves at home that beauty is there. And I would say that beautiful text so often invite beautiful illustrations. I told Ellen that for each of my siblings on my husband's side and my side of the family, when their first child is born, I give them a copy of A Child's Garden of Verses. And I don't think I've ever given anybody the same copy. Like, they've all been illustrated by different people, but they've all been incredibly beautiful. Because beautiful language, beautiful works invite beautiful art. Okay. So, man the worshiper creates art in praise of something greater. How many of you have read The Rage Against God by Peter Hitchens? Brother of Christopher Hitchens, the famous atheist. Okay, Peter and Christopher are brothers. I know Christopher died now, but Peter was also an atheist, just as much of a dedicated atheist as his own brother, until somewhere in his youngish adult years. He and his very sophisticated wife were traveling in France, and because they were educated tourists, they took the travel guide's advice and went down to the local hotel. It was called a hotel. I'm not sure exactly what kind of building it was. But they went to see in this small town a painting. And he records his feelings about this painting. I mean, The Last Judgment of Christ. Oh, brother. Why can't these people ever paint something else? You know, do we have to have 40 Last Judgments to look at? But they're cultivated people, so they go see the thing. And it was from the 1600s, one of van der Weyden's paintings. And it illustrates Christ as he comes through the clouds to return. And the saints are looking up in joy, and those who are not ready for his coming are fleeing from the presence of God. And he had this moment of shock. He was a hardened atheist. He saw these people. He said, because they weren't clothed in the painting, they seemed modern. Like, they weren't dated as medieval by wearing hose and fool's caps or whatever. They looked like the people he knew. They looked like him. They were fleeing. One man was vomiting because of his horror at this return. And right then, he suddenly, it came through his mind, what if it's real? What if there really is? What if there's a God? What if I'm accountable? And that was the beginning of his conversion to Christianity. Art is powerful. It is very powerful. We need to give children the right kind of art. And I want to say this. I know we don't have a lot of this kind of art in our circles. We're not Catholic. We don't have it on the walls of our churches. But we need to give portrayals that are convincing to children. The child for whom God has been reduced to a googly-eyed cartoon. I'm going to come back here. Do you ever see anything like this? Are your children's books illustrated this way? I feel like this is not what we want for our children. The child who has been reduced to a googly-eyed cartoon of a smiling old man will reject it as he grows older, just as he rejects dressing up as Batman and running around the house in his shorts. That makes sense to me. Contrast that with a book I brought from home, Cecily Mary Barker. Now, these are portrayals of Christ, and I know that some of our publishers have simply chosen not to portray pictures of God at all, which there is a certain amount of ancient reverence in that. It goes back to the Jewish they would not portray God because of it being irreverent. But just contrast this kind of cartoon figure with this. I'm sorry, I wasn't able to put this on the slide. There's beauty here. I don't necessarily think that Jesus looks just like that. But it's a gentleness and a beauty that comes through the artwork here. It's not some kind of cartoon character that, you know, it may as well be Superman or Spaghetti Man or whatever. You know, it's this. We need to be careful about how we project these things to our children. Great art shows the mark of divinity through the instinct to create beauty. Now, I'm saying this, man will create art. He always has, he always will. How many animals create art? Now, I know there are some birds that seem to decorate their nest. I know raccoons take tiny things home. But really, how many creatures create art for the joy of creating something beautiful? I believe that is a mark of the divine in humanity that only humanity has. Okay. So we show a mark of the divine through our instinct to create beautiful things. C.S. Lewis, if you've read A Brief Observed, I just read it this past year because of the death of a friend of mine, and I was struck again by this passage. He deals with his grief over losing his wife, and he strikes back at God very vividly in one passage, and he says, how do we know that God is good? How do we know he's not just a cosmic sadist, just up there having fun hurting us? And the next day or so, he writes again, and he says, you know, that was just a scream. I was just shaking my fist in God's face. He said, that can't be true. It can't be true. It feels that way because I've lost my wife, but it can't be true, because this is what he says. How could a God, a cosmic sadist, how could he create the beauty of the world? And he comes back to that. He says he knows of a man that he went to school with that was that saddest kind of personality, and he refers to him as SC. Now, a being like SC, however magnified, couldn't invent or create anything. He would set traps and try to bait them, but he'd never have thought of baits like love or laughter or daffodils or a frosty sunset. He make a universe? He couldn't make a joke or a bow or an apology or a friend. And he came back, no, God is a God of goodness, because of all the evidence we have around us. We live in a fallen world, but what God created was created good and beautiful. Beautiful. And that instinct to create is within us. It's within all of us. And it shows God's mark. He has placed his mark on humanity with that. Great art stands the test of time, and I'm going to say I believe we should introduce our children to great art. Now, this is not a place that Anabaptists have done super over the top well. When I go into the classroom and talk about art history, I get some very blank looks. But I feel like it's something we should be more aware of. Not all great art is nude. Actually, a very small percentage of it is. I know that you have to be careful of that when you study art. But there's so much art that is so worth your time. Children should know the gleaners. They should know the Angelus. They should gaze into the faces of children from years gone by. Let's look at a few of these. Ranuccio Farnese. This is by Titian in the year 1542. Is this a beautiful little boy? He doesn't look like he lived in the 1500s, does he? I mean, he has the same expression my little boy wears. Look at his eyes. Children should be able to gaze into the faces of these. Especially children. I mean, let them know great works of art. Show them children, beautifully painted children. I love to hear children's feedback on this, and if we have time, we will come back and try to get some of that. But I'm going to keep hopping here just in case we run out of time. How many of you know the name of this? Oh, it's right there. Sorry, the Pfeiffer. This is one of my favorite paintings. I love it so much that my husband has it as the little icon on his phone instead of a picture of himself. But I do love my husband. I love this art so much. And when we talk about composition, we will come back to it. Beautiful painting of a beautiful child. I love to show this to school children. How about Rembrandt's Girl with a Broom? I am not actually a huge Rembrandt fan myself, but I love this painting. She's leaning over a fence. I think she's on the edge of a well. You could just barely see the rounded shape there, and there's the bucket. And again, she's just so fresh. I mean, her clothing is ancient, but she's a child, as all children are. She's beautiful. Our children need to be able to see these beautiful works. Let's see. Yeah, what kind of time do I have? This is what's hanging in my living room that I paid $1.91 for. Can you ladies over there see this? I'll try to get out of the way. I think it's further back than it was. Often called the Helping Hand, but I don't think the artist actually named it that. He just signed the print and the year, which was 1881. It's a beautiful print. I use it when I teach composition, and we will come back to that again. The Gleaners. This is what's on my dining room wall. What is a companion picture to this? Do you know? I'm sure you know the painting, even if you don't recognize the name. It's called The Angelus. Yeah, it's the peasants out in the field, man and wife. They have a basket of potatoes there. It's called The Angelus because in the far distance you see the church tower, and the bells for The Angelus are ringing, and they stop and pray in their field work. These are lovely, lovely works that our children should know. If for nothing else, just for when the art teacher has to go in and tell them to draw something, you know. Well, I won't tell you everything I've had in the last year or so, but I'm going to show you one here in a little bit. All right. Children need to see these beautiful things. Third point, art can be taught. I am an art teacher. I am not a great artist, but I have always enjoyed art. I have done some illustrating. And the skills of art can be taught. Now, I find this very strange. I do not come from an art background. I grew up, I learned to play the piano. I did not learn to sing from written music, as many of you have. What is weird to me is that our Mennonite culture has said, we will continue to teach singing, it is important, and everyone can learn, right? We haven't done that with art. I think across, when I speak with most people of Anabaptist background, they view skills in art as something that you're just born with. Oh wow, you just came out that way. Well, not really. You know, you learn skills. You learn to be able to do this, and it can be taught just like music can be taught. The reason we have this conflict is because of a culture shift, and for some strange reason, Anabaptists have gone with half of it, but not the other. there's a romanticism versus craftsmanship. And if you look back at the very great artists, Michelangelo, Leonardo, those men really struggled to be recognized as artists at all because they were just craftsmen. I mean, Michelangelo just carved statues. So what if they looked like they were about to breathe? He was just a craftsman, just like the other craftsmen who made barrels and ropes or whatever. It was just his craft. And they learned it as a craft. Artists then started trying to kind of agitate to be recognized as something other than just a craftsman. But that did not really take hold until the Romantic movement of the late 18th and early 19th centuries. And this was true across the arts, dance, music, literature, and what we call art. And that is when the real push came, that they started hiding the fact that there were skills learned and started emphasizing the creative genius. Okay? And so artists that were very highly trained, very highly skilled, hid that. And just, this was my vision, and I just put it out here for you to see. And they really emphasized that cult of the genius, which is why our society today now has the jellyfish theory of the imagination, because we have moved toward recognizing that as an artistic vision that you dare not touch. It isn't a skill you learn, it's this inner vision that comes out, and only the talented few can do it. Well, that's how America thinks about music now. Do you realize that? People listen to music, and the talented few get up there and do it. You would have to listen to my husband for opinions on whether today's music is music or not. He's the music man, and he has a lot to say about that if you want to ask him. But Americans don't sing anymore, do they? By and large, no. That is not something that people do. That's what you listen to. And people in our circles feel the same way about art, but I say art can be taught, and it should be taught. Personally, I want our children to do useful and beautiful crafts, but moms, please teach it to your children at home, because when they come to school, I want to teach them art. Okay, so teach your children to crochet at home. I'm not going to sit there and teach them to crochet or studying art. Where do you start? If you are going to try to teach art, where are we going to start? Start with art appreciation by giving them real art to look at. Start with beautiful books as children. I have this lovely little edition, Once Upon a Time. It is entirely works by Jessie Wilcox Smith, who's one of my favorite children's illustrators. She did illustrated back at the turn of the century. The things that are written to go with them were not original. They were just written because they were beautiful pictures, and somebody just said, let's write something beautiful to go with beautiful art. Start out with these kinds of beautiful works for your children. As you read beautiful language, give them beautiful art to look at. When Jesse came across the sea, how many of you have this? Or The Christmas Miracle of Jonathan Toomey? Okay. P.J. Lynch, I wish I could do art like this man. I can't. Beautiful, beautiful illustration. Absolutely gorgeous. I wanted to have some slides of this up there, too. Maybe you'll just have to look through my books when we're done. Give your children beautiful things, beautiful books. But then actually teach. Let's try to teach real art appreciation by looking at actual paintings. I am not saying you have to take them to an art museum. I actually do go to art museums. I just went to St. Louis this past summer for my birthday, and it was a very delightful time. My husband did take the children to a different museum. I don't know that he would have had to. I don't remember seeing a single nude in there. I don't know if I just didn't notice because I was too busy enjoying other things, or if I didn't see one. I'm not sure. But anyway, beautiful art needs to be appreciated. Teach color. Teach the color wheel. You probably all studied the color wheel at some time in your life, I would hope, assume. It's more fun than it looks like when you first step up in front of children. I'm going to just ignore the hand there because I don't have a very good eraser. But primary colors. What are the three primary colors? Does anyone know? Yeah?
Red, blue, yellow.
Red, blue, yellow. My color wheel has yellow at the top, I believe. And red and blue. All right, primary colors. And I teach children. I taught an art class last year. All right, you have these three colors. You can mix anything you want. Now start mixing. And I only give them those. Now paint. We did not come up with great works of art. But they started learning, and they had a lot of fun. So these things are important. As Dr. Seuss says, these things are fun, and fun is good. Secondary colors. All right, mix these, and you get purple. Sorry about my terrible handwriting. Mix these, you get orange. Mix these, you get green. Tertiary colors. You go out one more step. Mix purple and red, you get orchid. Purple and blue, you get violet. Green and yellow, yellow-green. Orange and red. What do you want to call it? Anyway, orange-red in there. Teach them those kinds of things. Teach them to divide it down the middle and paint in cool colors and warm colors. We did this exercise at school last year. I gave them the exact same sketch and said, okay, you may only use warm colors on this painting. It was the top half of the page. Next time, we did cool colors on the bottom half of the page. I was amazed what some of them came up with. Some of them honestly looked like little Google goes to school. They did. But we had some good things come out as well. So teach these things. If you aren't teaching at school and you don't have time to teach them at home, I know how the time factor goes. Say some words to someone with influence. Let's get this stuff into our schools. Our children need to learn these things. Teach composition. That is one of the most... That is so much fun. Composition is so much fun. I'm going to go back to the helping hand. Children need to learn to look at a work of art and tell you what the center of interest is. Can anybody look at this painting and tell me what do you think is the center of interest? What was the artist drawing the attention to? Okay. Most specifically to her face, right? How does it happen? How is the artist pulling attention to this very intent little face? She is so into what she's doing. Okay, you see how they're converging? Absolutely. Lines are converging at the center of interest. And lines all over this painting are doing that. Okay? It's pulling you in. Her little scarf or apron, whatever it is. Even Grandpa's pipe is pointing to that little girl's face. Okay? The artist has a very definite center of interest. And all lines pull you to that. Now, this can be done too statically. When I first started learning about some stuff like this, I produced some very static and tacky illustrations because I overdid it. But that's why great art is great. Because they do it right. And children ought to be able to look at this stuff. The gleaners. What makes this painting so beautiful? And maybe you don't think it's beautiful, I do. Just from you, what do you think? Why is this painting exceptional?
I like the colors.
Okay, the colors are muted. They are not loud, they're muted. Something else?
I was gonna say the lighting. The lighting just highlights.
It looks hot, doesn't it? Even though it's not a hot color painting, there's a haziness about it that makes you think there's actually haze in the atmosphere. It's warm. What else? There are some compositional elements here that are very, very important.
This might not be what you're looking for. It's centered on the earth. It's centered on the earth.
Okay, I like that. I was not thinking about that, but I do really like that, and his paintings were that. He first painted portraits for the aristocrats of France, but he turned back to his peasant background and began showing it as something of dignity and beauty. He was actually prosecuted by the French government because they felt like he was sympathizing with the French presence in the French Revolution. It was dangerous. But he said, this is where man's dignity is. Okay? And his paintings are beautiful. But compositionally wise, look at the forms. We have 1, 2, 3 rounded forms. Look at the middle background. 1, 2, 3 rounded forms. And if you look on back, 1, 2, 3 rounded forms. He repeated that. And it pulls the whole painting together into this beautiful, harmonious painting. Okay? These kinds of things, students love this stuff. They really do. I mean, I pull this into the classroom, and they're all going, and you start saying stuff like this, and they're, shoo, and you say, I want you to go home and find something and bring it back to class and show us. Children get into this stuff. They get wildly hyped up about this kind of stuff, and they start trying to do it on their own. And it's not always great. I'm going to show you a picture right now. This is actually for my second point. Teach perspective drawing. I've met so many adults who have such a bad taste in their mouth about perspective drawing, and I don't want to be mean, but I wonder if it's not because they had a boring teacher. Because perspective is fun when you realize that you can represent shapes and objects in three-dimensional space on a two-dimensional paper. It looks three-dimensional. Now, I know you can't see this very well, and it is kind of a cartoon drawing. The girl had the perspective right. She has a long way to go before she produces a great work of art, but the reason I pulled this out in front of the classroom and said, I am so impressed with this, is because she put the cross on the podium at the exact center. This is one point of perspective, and she had the center of that right in the middle of the cross. And I told her in front of the whole classroom, this is what great artists do. She was inspired. This year, I only had her a couple of weeks last year. This year, I expect this girl to be turning out more than just line cartoons because she is excited. I said, you did something great artists do. And I didn't make that up. It's true. Teach perspective. It's easy to learn. And it's pretty exciting when you get to actually representing things that look right. They no longer look like cartoons. Children get excited about this stuff. Let's see, what else can we say? Oh, I've got to look. I know our time really is up. But please, please, look at one of my very favorite paintings, John Singer Sargent again. I have this artist in my bathroom, not this painting. This painting is hanging in Boston Museum of Art, and I wanted so badly to go there last year. We didn't just because of COVID restrictions. Someday, I want to see this. What are your thoughts? How many of you are familiar with this already? Nobody? What's going on here? We don't have time. It's time to stop. I'm sorry, we're going to have to stop. I'm going to conclude with just one beautiful quote. Every beautiful thing is an anthem to hope. The hope of what will be when God will gather us to himself. This was written by Martin Slesky. He is a violin maker. And I loved it. I think it's true of art. I hope you are inspired to go home. Keep getting beauty in your homes. Put beauty in our schools. Our schools need these things. Thank you very much for your attention.